A string of ramshackle trailers lines a small creek that's wedged between steep hillsides in Bailey Branch Hollow. One of them, a banged-up pink trailer, vintage 1960s, belongs to Virginia Trusty. She bought it from a relative for $800.
I'm 30 years old. I'm a single parent, raising four kids.
Sissy, get away at the door.
There's Paul Trusty. That's my oldest. He's 10. Then there's Brittany Trusty. She's 8. Jonathan Trusty. He's 4. And Ashley Trusty, who's 14 months old.
You buy me a little dog.
I just hope they have a better future, something to look forward to. A better life than what they got, well, what I've had.
Virginia grew up poor just a few miles away, the daughter of a tenant tobacco farmer. Now her kids are 4 of the nation's 14 million poor children. Her family survives on public aid worth $10,000 a year, barely half the federal poverty threshold for a family of 5.
This is Mommy's bedroom.
Who sleeps in here?
Mommy, Sissy, and John John.
Okay, and you sleep?
On the couch.
The couch that doubles as Brittany's bed is worn and stained. There's a chipboard ceiling and a patchwork of plywood paneling on the walls. The trailer is heated by a coal-burning stove.
Well, it did stay real cold in here. We put plastic stuff up over the windows. We insulated that to keep the cold air and stuff out. It's home. It's home for many kids. It's roof over our head for right now. A lot of better things happen for us.
Virginia doesn't own a car. Her phone service comes and goes with her ability to pay the bill. She is almost a prototypical welfare mother. She went on AFDC when her first son was born 10 years ago. She never married. Each of her kids has a different father. None stayed around for long, and none helps Virginia support the children.
I can't give them everything they want, but I try. I do.
You wouldn't guess it from economic reports, but 20% of American children live in families with incomes below the federal poverty line. That's almost double the child poverty rate when Virginia was small in the early 1970s. Poor kids have gotten poorer, too. There's a complicated stew of reasons. The number of single-parent families has grown, public aid doesn't buy as much as it used to, and the jobs available to workers without special skills are more likely to pay poverty wages.
I think it's good that the economy is up, but what's it going to do for people in eastern Kentucky? Unless you want to work at a fast food restaurant or a grocery store. And that's not enough to raise a family on.
Under welfare reform, Virginia is required to look for a job. Until she finds one, she has to work for her welfare check. This day, she's crushing plastic laundry bottles with her tennis shoe at the County Recycling Center in downtown Salyersville.
It ain't no fun job, tell you the truth, but it's just to keep the kids on fed and took care of. From where else, it all means I've got right now.
Kentucky's welfare-to-work law requires Virginia to put in 25 hours a week for the county. Her $383 monthly check amounts to a wage of less than $4 an hour.
And I ain't nobody gonna hang me nothing for free. I ain't.
While some who've gone from welfare to work have also left poverty behind, many have not. A recent report found 1/3 of poor children now have working parents. It's 4:30 the next morning. Just down the hollow from Virginia Trusty's place, her brother-in-law, Wilbur Wallen, stokes the fire in his coal and wood-burning stove.
Pretty house thing this month.
Wilbur's wife, Janet, is up making his lunch. The Wallens' 4 small dogs bustle about, but their 2 sons, aged 12 and 14, are still asleep. They share a single bed in the back of the trailer. Janet daubs hydrogen peroxide on the back of Wilbur's swollen right hand. He poked a deep hole in it on the job a couple of days ago.
That's sore name, was it?
Wilbur says he could have taken the day off and collected workers' comp.
But if I'd done that, we're on overtime right now, and I wouldn't have got overtime. And I need all the money I can get. See, my boy, he's graduating from 8th grade this year. I've got to buy his cap and gown for him. $25, I believe he said. And some schools is all the time wanting money for something.
Until a year and a half ago, the Wallens relied on welfare and whatever minimum wage jobs Wilbur could find. Now the family lives entirely on Wilbur's wage at a truck assembly plant, $8.30 an hour.
Well, I've got to admit, I've got a little bit better job than I did used to, but you have to travel for her to get to it.
Far indeed. 184 miles round trip every day. Once Wilbur gets his 1981 Dodge started, he'll spend almost 4 hours in it, driving to and from his job in central Kentucky. His reward is a paycheck that lifts his family just to the federal poverty line, about $17,000 for a family of four.
This next song goes out to Mac Robinson, and we understand that Mac Robinson is a little bit sick, and we hope he feels better.
Take a drive in Appalachia, and you'll understand one big reason for its chronic economic problems. Businesses don't want to locate in a place that's hard to get to, and you can't drive more than 35 miles an hour on roads that dip and swerve so relentlessly through the hills. Some things have changed since the 1960s, when Robert Kennedy and other war on poverty advocates drove these roads. They called attention to laid-off coal miners and their hungry, shoeless children. The images jabbed at the nation's conscience. The resulting federal spending created some middle-class jobs for social service workers, but mainly strengthened the safety net. Food stamps, Head Start, and Medicaid eased the symptoms of poverty without curing it. So why not move to a place with more and better jobs? Janet Wallen says it's out of the question.
I just like to stay somewhere where I know all the folks, and know all the places. I know most of the places in Magoffin County because I was born and raised at them, and I know most of the people in Magoffin County, for which I've got a lot of kin in Magoffin County and everything. Some will help you and some won't. Just take what you can get. And that's the way we do. We just help each other out around here. That's what I like about it.
Anyway, for the Wallens, a move to the city would mean more expensive housing. They bought their trailer for $500, and it probably would not open doors to lucrative jobs. The new global information economy pays a premium for the workers it needs most, those with a college degree or technical training. Employers view people without those assets as a dime a dozen, as they are in places like Mexico and Indonesia. Janet and Wilbur Wallen are educational have-nots.
I went to seventh grade. I passed out of seventh grade into the eighth grade, but I didn't go to the eighth grade. I got married 3 days after school was out. I was 13 years old and I got married. He was 17.
In the late afternoon, an orange school bus crawls up the hollow and drops off Janet's two sons and her nieces and nephews. Studies confirm child poverty is often a trap. Poor children get sick and die more often than middle-class kids. They commit more crimes, and they're twice as likely to drop out before finishing high school. More than ever, in this economy, dropping out means repeating the cycle of poverty.
My youngest one, if I give him a chance, he'd quit school right now. But we won't give him that chance.
There's a chilly spring drizzle, and the creek is running fast. 12-year-old Jim Wallen gives his rooster, Red, some fresh water.
My aunt got me a rooster. He was a half game and a half big stock.
Jim explains how he got Red in a rooster swap.
I held that rooster I had to that one down there.
Okay. You like this one better?
Yeah.
How come?
He's prettier and he fights better.
Jim is a handsome, athletic-looking boy with tousled blonde hair. He says his mom is right. He doesn't like school much. His grades range from B's to D's, and he doesn't get along with some of his teachers.
They're grouchy and stuff. They drop at me and stuff. Most because I don't listen to them. And I turn my work and they say I don't turn it in. They say I get low computer grades and stuff, low testing scores.
America Americans have carried on a long-running, politically loaded debate about why poor children don't fare as well on average as middle-class kids. Some say poor parents fail their children by setting bad examples, teen pregnancy, addiction, and neglecting to teach the value of education. Others say parents who are the product of generations of poverty can't be expected to guide their kids into the middle class. One nearly legendary Appalachian, Eula Hall, says she sees what happens to poor kids.
You give up. People give up. These very, very bright, talented children, if they just encouraged. And if you don't dream, you soon die.
In the 1970s, Hall used a federal grant to found the Mud Creek Clinic for poor people in Floyd County. Now at 71, she says the social divide that beats poor kids down is more palpable than ever.
It's so sad to see little children withdrawn and isolated from the rest of lots of other children, and because of the parents having to live in poverty. It's class. You know, it used to be the black and white, but anymore it's the rich and poor. It's what you got.
Jim Wallen says he doesn't know about class divisions, but he does feel picked on in school.
I mostly fight a lot because they always make fun of me. Say I'm ugly and fat, stupid.
But you're not any of those things. Why would they say that?
I don't know. They don't like me, I guess.
For a lot of kids like Jim, the trouble starts before the first bus ride to kindergarten. Recent studies have found that a child's chances of succeeding in school are damaged most profoundly by deep poverty in early childhood. And it's precisely the children at that vulnerable preschool age who are most likely to be poor, and to be extremely poor. In fact, the government says 4.2 million American kids face moderate to severe hunger. That means they miss meals or their parents can't afford to feed them a balanced diet. It's lunchtime at the Making Head Start Center in Letcher County, Kentucky. The four-year-olds and their teachers sit at round tables and dish up spaghetti, sweet corn, lettuce salad, and buttered bread. The children get breakfast at the center, too. Director Jeanette Yance.
Our lunch is not really what you would consider a lunch. It is more like a balanced dinner, so that if this is the only meal and breakfast that the kids get, then they have already had their daily needs.
Head Start is a federal preschool program designed to give poor children a boost. Many experts consider it well-intentioned, but too little too late. Yance says it's easier to feed children than to fill other holes in their lives. According to parent surveys, only a fourth of the kids at this center have books at home.
The ones that do really enjoy being read to, and you can tell which ones have been emerged into books and literature of any kind. And then maybe 75% really pay no attention whatsoever to books.
Back at Virginia Trustee's trailer, 8-year-old Brittany Trustee digs for the only children's books her family owns. They belong to her baby sister, Ashley.
She only had three. She's her own. Sissy got a, this is her Christmas present, what she got from her social worker.
Do you have any of your own?
No.
Parents in poverty can't afford many books or educational toys. It's tempting, though, to find fault with Brittany's mother for spending $30 on a used Nintendo instead of books. Maybe that's one reason Paul, the 10-year-old, struggles in school. Then again, Brittany gets straight A's.
I want to be a teacher.
Of course, some children do climb over the barriers that come with growing up poor. Americans love their stories. Brittany's cousin Jim Wallen, the 12-year-old who doesn't like school, eats his evening meal in a chair in front of the TV. With his fork, he taps out the beat to an ad for a college scholarship program. Without Walmart scholarship.
Jimmy quit. He's suffering quit.
If you ask Jim's mother, Janet, what she thinks about the middle-class world on the television, the implied contrast to her own life seems to poke at her pride.
We get everything we need. As long as we get what we need and everything, make a living, that's it. In which daddy's out making a living and everything, mommy's at home and taking care of the kids and that. So that's the way I see it.
But at other times, Janet shows a very different and fierce wish for her sons. For instance, when Jim says he'd like to get married at 18 or 21 at the oldest.
Huh?
You're allowed to get married when you're 21.
Yes, you're allowed to get married when you're 21, but where are you going to take her to?
Oh.
Without the money and without a home, you got to have a money and you got to have a home to take her to.
Yeah, but I'm going to get me home first.
There ain't no way you can get married at the age of 18 and think that you can go through college, get a job, and support a family, and rent your own home and everything else. You can't do that. That's what Mommy and Daddy's been trying to tell you. You get your education and everything, then you can get you a woman. Other than that, you ain't. If you don't go to, through all of that, then you ain't going to have nothing. And you know it.
Janet and Wilbur Wallen are drilling their sons on perhaps the two most important steps out of poverty. Stay in school and don't have kids until you can support them. There are hopeful signs, such as the falling teen pregnancy rate, that young people are increasingly grasping those rules of the modern economy. Still, millions of poor kids enter the race well behind the starting line. For many of them, knowing the rules may not be enough. For NPR News, this is John Biewen.